Embarking on a high-conflict divorce can be overwhelming, leaving you feeling uncertain and powerless. That's precisely why the Divorce Readiness Masterclass was created, a free one-hour live session to empower you through the toughest divorces. Uncover the entire scope of the divorce process and learn our secret strategies to reclaim your power. Visit jbddivorcesupport.com/masterclass and begin to confidently handle your divorce today. Welcome to the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast, where we invite you into a journey of healing and personal transformation that will radically change your divorce experience, heal your heart while refining your character, and set you up to be effective and feel empowered as you navigate the practical and emotional challenges of divorce. I'm your host, Karen McMahon, founder of Journey Beyond Divorce. My divorce brought me to my knees, and it also transformed me and set me on this path to help you.
What they do to you, every tactic, everything that they do is not designed from a place where you loved them and slept next to them for 20 years, right? These are the kind of things that are just off the wall. I'll call it crazy. Off the wall. Who does that, right? The kind of level that people will go through are the spectrum, right? The spectrum is from here to here. You can have a perfectly normal divorce with a narcissist, separate and have a nice day. You can have that. Not very often, right? It is always turned into a war zone. And the war zone becomes scorched earth for you because there's false allegations. If someone's coming in and accusing you of all these things and you're like, I didn't do that. What are you talking about? And they're projecting what they were doing onto you to make them into the victim and you are the one they're the victim of. These are the signs that it's on the narcissistic spectrum, right? We don't need a diagnosis.
Stepping into the realm of high conflict divorce can be daunting after years in a dysfunctional marriage that's left you feeling diminished and uncertain. In our High Conflict Divorce Demystified series, we acknowledge the emotional roller coaster you're on, facing self-doubt and fear, especially regarding your children and finances. We're here to provide empathy, education, and guidance as you navigate the maze of legal intricacies and emotional challenges ahead. So let's dive in. Hey folks, welcome to another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Today we're discussing divorcing a narcissist, mastering the emotional roller coaster. And with me today is Tracy Malone, a narcissistic abuse coach and author. And I'll tell you more about her in just a minute. So we're diving into a topic that many of you are eager to learn about. And I want you to imagine being on a roller coaster, and not just any roller coaster. One where the ups are few and the downs are many and often triggering. That's a bit what it feels like to divorce a narcissist. And when you're divorcing a narcissist, it's not just about the legal battle. It's an emotional journey where the usual playbook doesn't always apply. The biggest challenges often come from the constant unpredictability and the emotional manipulation involved. Narcissists will use tactics like gaslighting, where they make you question your own reality and sanity, or stonewalling, where they shut down communication and throw you off. Today, we're looking at what you can do if you're in this situation. We'll be discussing strategies that include gathering your support system, the importance of documentation, and how to stay calm, as reacting emotionally only feeds the narcissist's love of chaos and conflict. And perhaps most importantly, prioritizing your own emotional and physical well-being. Divorcing a narcissist is not just about winning a legal battle. It's about reclaiming your mind, your peace, and your life. As I said, with me today is Tracy Malone, an acclaimed international coach specializing in working with people who are dealing with narcissistic abuse. Tracy's the founder of Narcissist Abuse support.com, a global platform to support survivors of narcissistic abuse, and she has been a powerful ally for those dealing with narcissistic relationships for over 10 years. So, with no further ado, welcome, Tracy.
Hello, Karen. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be a great conversation, folks. Tracy knows this topic like the back of her hand, and she's done a tremendous amount in this area. And I'm wondering, Tracy, if you could start with your backstory and how you came to do this work.
Sure. So I did not know what a narcissist was, did not know through my seven trials and very contentious divorce that I was dealing with a narcissist. No one ever said the word. I just sat there looping and talking to my therapist going, why are they being so mean? I was fighting a family, not just my husband. His entire rich family came in to destroy me. That was their mission. And I just didn't understand like what happened. And I didn't understand past the divorce. And then I started dating somebody that friends introduced me, who had also had a horrible divorce, and what a good match she'd be. And we dated for a couple years, and I found out he was cheating, said, go away, I don't want to talk to you again. And then a couple months later, after he kept hoovering, didn't know what hoovering was, why did you keep coming to my door? I don't want to hear why you slept with the only other girl at Christmas dinner. Go away. And eventually, 3 months later, I was in church going for a forgiveness sermon. And I had forgiveness on my heart and said, I think I'll just stop by and forgive him. I don't want him back, but I just want to let that part go. Well, he didn't want to let it go. He called the police and had me arrested and put in jail. And when I got out 24 hours later, someone said, he's gaslighting you. Look that up. And I'm like, what's that? And that unfolded him. That unfolded my ex-in-laws. And then I went, why me? And then, oh my gosh, it was my entire family. I mean, it was years of digging deeper and deeper. So the more I studied on the divorce aspect and understanding that, it's like, oh, let me talk about this. Let me learn about that. And the more I learned, the more I realized I didn't see it because it was so normalized for me.
It was everywhere. You were like saturated in it.
And it was all I ever knew.
And it was normal because it was all you ever, oh my God.
Gaslighting.
It's actually one of the most dramatic stories I've heard.
Oh my God, there you go. Well, it's sort of like a victim to hero story because I never expected to change my career, for goodness sake. I had a career. I was perfectly happy in my career, right? This became very slow and I started support groups for myself. I'm like, let me find other people that need help. And I would fill the library and they would come and send us security guards because we had too many people. And they would yell at us every single time we had a meeting. So I started a second one. And now I'm doing 60 people a month. And I'm going, okay, guys, we got to stop like just the stories over and over. Let's heal. And I started to learn and started to heal and work with them and teach them boundaries or the next one and the next one. And before I knew it, I was kind of coaching. I did both jobs for about 5 years. And this has been full time for many years now.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that story. And that certainly informs your personal experience with this personality disorder. And so I'm excited about this conversation with you today, where we can really highlight for my listeners what's different. And I think I want to start with, I don't use the word narcissist a lot because personally, I feel like there's borderline personality, there's autism, there are all of these different neurodiverse people. And I do think that what the narcissist has on all of them is that kind of 365 degree blind spot to their own part in it. But what would you say right up front in terms of, am I divorcing a narcissist? Am I just divorcing someone who has anger management issues? Is he or she just a little selfish? Like, how would you answer that question? And does it even matter? So let's start there.
Well, I actually have a rubber stamp that says narcissist, and I tell people and I hold it up. It doesn't matter what we call them. It really doesn't matter. The word is not important. But if the behaviors align with the word, then you have a different direction to get the education and the help. Because I didn't, all through that, the divorce and the crazy times, I had a therapist who did not know what a narcissist was. So for 7 years, I'm paying him through the divorce, through the da-da-da. And then after the arrest, I'm like, what's a narcissist? Someone said he's a narcissist. And he goes, well, they like to look in the mirror. So again, all time was wasted without someone who gave me the word to go to a book to find the answers for myself, right?
So let's talk then about the characteristics that one wants to look for to see the level of conflict that they're in for as they divorce. Let's put it that way. So let's just run through some of those characteristics.
Well, there's going to be a lack of empathy without question. And if you are familiar with DARVO, which is deny, attack, reverse victim and offender, it's always, it's not me, it's you, right? That's what a narcissist does off the bat. You know, they're going to have that no empathy for what they're doing to you. Again, you've been married for 40 years, give her half the money and go away. But it is, I'm going to get you. There's almost this like attack part of them that comes out in the divorce when they feel that they're losing. The black and white thinking gets deployed, which means you go from the wife of 20 years to I'm going to kill you and your children too. Like they don't care what they do to you. Every tactic, everything that they do is not designed from a place where you loved them and slept next to them for 20 years, right? These are the kind of things that are just off the wall. I'll call it crazy. Off the wall. Who does that, right? The kind of level that people will go through are the spectrum, right? The spectrum is from here to here. You can have a perfectly normal divorce with a narcissist, separate and have a nice day. You can have that. Not very often, right? It is always turned into a war zone. And the war zone becomes scorched earth for you because there's false allegations. If someone's coming in and accusing you of all these things, and you're like, I didn't do that. What are you talking about? And they're projecting what they were doing onto you to make them into the victim, and you are the one they're the victim of. These are the signs that it's on the narcissistic spectrum, right? We don't need a diagnosis.
So we're talking war zone. They're very offended. They have to win, right? So, like, win at all costs, black and white thinking, no empathy, that kind of deflection that they do. Can you talk a little bit about there's different, I guess, types, right? So, the covert, what would you say about what are the key categories? And can you maybe even give a definition of how they show up a little differently?
Sure. So the most popular one that's being talked about is the covert narcissist now, which is the one that on the surface is not the grandiose. The grandiose narcissist is almost flamboyantly like, it's about me, aren't I great? La la la, right? They're that kind of person. Whereas the covert is the soccer coach, the guy that everybody loves, the Girl Scout troop leader who does it all and everyone loves them. But as soon as the door closes, they're evil and cruel to their partner, right? So there's this public persona versus what happens behind closed doors with a covert, right? That's where nobody sees the abuse. It's like, no, they were the best wife, the best husband. Oh my God, you were so lucky, right? Because that's the public face the covert shows, right? Your malignant narcissists are above that, which are the evilest of all. We're talking borderline sociopath or psychopath. And the differences here are that it's not just the lying and hiding money aspect of the spectrum that the more covert would be doing, those sort of tactics. When you get into the malignant narcissist, again, this is the kill or be killed concept where they are calling the police on you. I've had people with child protective services call 30 times. I've had people that they have been committed and they get their whole entire family like convinced that the wife is an alcoholic and we got to put her away and lock her up just to win, right? There's nothing to do with the fact that they wanted you to get help because you really were going crazy. It is false allegations to the level that will put you in jail, like my Dirk did. Found out that he'd had his ex-wife arrested several times too. So higher spectrum of that more evil behavior.
I've actually had a client whose spouse had her committed to a psychiatric ward twice and created a whole documentation and background about her being this unhinged individual. And she wasn't. She was just
Traumatized.
really traumatized and maybe a little bit gullible. Okay, so folks, at the end of the day, whether you've got that grandiose, charismatic personality, the kind soccer coach, or the malignant, there's a lot of commonality. And what we're going to do is really dive into you, right? So we can't change them. They're not going to fix themselves. And so the question becomes, now that you've become bold and courageous enough to step into divorce and free yourself, what do you want to look at for? What do you want to start doing maybe differently? What are some strategies? So why don't we dive into that for them? So let's start with what the biggest challenges are for those, and you and I both divorce narcissists. So it's kind of like it also is every shade. There's so many different shades of it, right? For the 14 years I've been doing this, I've seen so many different variations. So let's talk about what you and I see as some of the biggest challenges.
Well, I would say that for the victim, that the hardest thing is coming to terms with that the person you married is not the person you're divorcing. Like they are holding on to that. But they were never like this, or, it's a hard thing when you start to unfold and find out the years of deceit. Like it's not just now, but oh my goodness, they've been hiding money for 20 years. It's mind blowing because you had so much trust in them. And suddenly, they've been hiding that and they often have a second life. And I'm not just saying a second family. I'm saying they've been having an affair with this person for 15 years of your marriage, right? The jerk who had me arrested. Three of us at the same time for 2.5 years, right? I was actually the official babysitter. And every time he would get his work schedule and he would say, well, I'm going to be in Chicago from this day to this date. Can you watch the kids? And I would give up my life, move my entire computer and my life into his house to take his kids to soccer and stuff. And I found out later because of the second girlfriend that I became friends with and went to Italy with, we found out that every time she was in town, he would take her to a hotel. I was home watching his kids, and he would send me pictures of him in Chicago, not him in Chicago, but random clip art of here, Chicago, wish you were here, honey, right? So that's really on the deep, deep end of crazy.
So that's on the higher end of the spectrum. And I did not have that experience. I had an experience of the most nasty, hostile, mean things being said to me. And my ex had a very unique and complicated relationship with money. So we were often very much in the red. So there's a whole spectrum. And the first thing I hear you saying is, the person you married, that sweet, that grandiose, that's not who you're divorcing. And what's interesting about that, Tracy, is I'll sometimes ask clients because they're like, I want him or her back and I love him or her so much. And then my question is, tell me all of the ways that you have felt so deeply loved by your spouse over the last 5 years, just 5 years. You married 25 years. And 9 times out of 10, like he takes the garbage out, she'll watch the kids. Like it's so, and the client themselves can hear themselves, and I'll be like really quiet. And then, is there anything else? Would you like to add anything else? Can I read that list back to you? That very short, kind of sad list. But that breaking of the rose-colored glasses that you want back this fictitious person from many years ago, but it's been so many years since they've been that way. Is that like what you're getting at?
Absolutely. Again, it's that shock, and you're still hooked to the story you were told in the beginning about how great they were. And maybe they were in the beginning or for a short time, right? But then it starts to ebb, and all they're doing is taking out the garbage. And you're
And
like, oh,
so,
yeah, they do that.
what is so if that's the challenge, let's go challenge solution here. So I'm hearing that in that particular case, we know that the narcissist has their bucket full of problems. There's an issue with the person who's forgetting the last 15 years and remembering the first five. So what would you say to that person for what they can do differently?
Well, I think the first thing is coming into reality about the truth of how it really was, which helps them let go of it, right? If you're clinging on to a fantasy, it's really hard. But if you like what you just described is to pluck off and peel back the layers of the onion and go, so how wonderful was it? And how often did this happen? Or, you know, blah, 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 blah. And you're starting to go, oh, wow, you're right. Because we do cling on to and hold on to the good because we want it, right? We forget that it's not there anymore. But that's what most survivors have to do is really understand the truth about the situation and, you know, how is co-parenting with them and are they cooperative and blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden you're like, no, they don't do anything. I have an exercise in my group where I say, give me a hand. This is how much you did. This is equal 50% with both of you and him or her. How much did you do? And they're always like this, and they did nothing. So it ends up where you are basically a slave, and you just got used to doing everything because you knew that all they would do once a week is take out the garbage, right?
So, if the first thing is kind of stepping out of delusion and into reality, if that's what I hear you saying, what's another challenge? What's like the next challenge that they face that?
I think one of the challenges that they will face is sort of the, again, it's kind of the same thing, but it's the cracking of the gaslighting egg. It's what's the truth and what's not the truth, right? Because they are stuck in this, not only the fantasy about what the relationship was, but they often have been gobbling up the narcissist's gaslighting for so long that it becomes imprinted on them and they believe it as truth.
So when you say they believe it, are we talking about the, so are we talking about, would you say that, because I have my own perspective, but I'm trying to get yours out on the table first. So the truth about them, about how that they're not as bad and pathetic and unloving, or the truth about what? Like what?
You're gonna poke at the truth about the situation of the relationship. Were they really as good as you remember? Just like you said in the beginning, right? It's poking at the reality of your life together, right? And it often isn't as good as it was in the beginning, certainly.
So, I think for so many of us who've been gaslit, we could boil it down to I start questioning my own sanity and wondering if I'm remembering incorrectly or if I am the one who's the problem. Or, of course, how many times I was called a narcissist. It's like, so am I the narcissist? Am I? So, would you say that step two, like breaking the gaslighting egg, is stepping into truth about who you actually are and the experience you've had?
Absolutely. And just breaking through the lies, because again, they've made you feel less than. They made you feel responsible for things you weren't responsible for. They blamed you. Again, big narcissistic trait is to blame. And often the victims or enablers of a narcissist, however you want to put that word, are on the codependent spectrum, people pleasing, boundaryless, kind, loving, giving, empaths, right? And so to tap into that versus the evil that you might have been, and again, spectrum. Some people have never been called a name, never had verbal abuse to them, and others are constant. And so if they are telling you whether they're verbally saying you're not good enough, or they're just in, did you really have to do it that way? And little tiny pick, pick, pick that make you feel less than good enough, right? It's coming into it and going, you know, I always was good enough. I just was not with someone that could be the other part of my partner. It's not me. That's what they've got to come into is learning that they do have responsibility. They didn't set proper boundaries. They took more than they should have, right? We all do. We give them second chances. We give them 30,000th chances, right? Over and over, we try. We try harder when they get into this place. We try to fix it. And those are the kind of things that we have to work on in order to make it out of this, is to find our own responsibility in here. I'm not saying we're to blame, but when we heal the wounds that have been inflicted from the narcissist, we are on a different plane of our life. And really, just they used us. If we have fears, a narcissist will tap into our fears and poke at them and make us frozen out of that, right? So healing the fears and understanding the fears makes us much more resilient because they can't, you, no one can use that against you again.
Right. So you just said a whole lot in there. So under codependent, so one thing that I think would be really valuable for us to clarify in this conversation is the difference between being a caretaker. I have a service-oriented heart. I am absolutely a caretaker. I love to take care of my family, my kids, my friends, my clients. But there's something different between that and what I used to do in my marriage, which was codependent, right? So I'm a recovering codependent. How would you describe the difference between caretaking and codependence?
You've heard the saying, April showers bring May flowers. If co-parenting has been difficult this year due to your ex's alcohol abuse, you need SoberLink. How it works is simple. Your co-parent will test at scheduled times. Built-in facial recognition will confirm their identity. Tampa sensors will flag any attempts to cheat. And results will get sent instantly to your phone, so you know that your kids are with a sober parent. Lay the groundwork for brighter days ahead. Visit soberlink.com/JBD to learn more and get $50 off your device.
It's when it's not healthy anymore. Like caregiving and loving and giving to your family is normal. It's not unhealthy. It's when you put other people's needs before your own. That's the codependent trap, right? That's where if we are giving to everyone and not taking care of our own needs, that's the difference, right? Again, we can give to our family, love on our family all we want, but we still have time and do things for ourselves. If we are only giving, 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 there's nothing left for us. That's the cleanest I can come.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I'm going to add a little nuance to that, which is if I give to my child, it's completely out of love. It's not because I need them to love me. It's not because I'm trying to get, it's not because I'm afraid they're going to get angry with me. It's like, I am going to give up this thing I was going to do because you're asking for my help and I love you and I want to help you. Beautiful, healthy caretaking. When I give up something that I don't want to give up, and then I feel angry and bitter because if I don't do it, he's going to get angry at me, or she's not going to give me sex tonight, or whatever the case may be, that's coming from fear. That's coming from, I'm going to give myself up to try and control and get something from you. So to me, that's the codependent versus the healthier caretaking. Can you add to that?
Absolutely. I think what you just hit was the obligation.
Yep.
Versus the choice, right? The choice to give to your son or your child, right? Versus if I don't, they're going to get mad at me. And if I don't do this, I know what will happen. So I better clean the house even more before they get home, right? It's that fear, as you said. Those are the differences in there. And again, codependency doesn't have to come in every single survivor. It's a spectrum. Some people are that and some people aren't, right?
I think we can say that about everything we're talking about, folks. It's a spectrum. You might find yourself low or high, and you're soon to be ex low or high. So take what makes sense and leave the rest, as we say in 12-step programs.
I have an amazing book that I want to mention, which is from my friend Darlene Lancer. I don't even know the name of it at the moment, but it is a codependent book, and it shows us step by step how narcissists are codependent too. And it shows us, I think she calls them caretakers. So it's the narcissist and the caretaker. Like we go through each one, how a narcissist handles shame, how a caretaker handles shame, how a narcissist handles control, which we automatically go, narcissist control, right? But how the codependent controls.
Big time.
Read that chapter. I had resisted going, I'm not a codependent. Nah, that's not me. That's not me. I would not take that pill for a long time until I read that chapter. Yeah. And I went, I am controlling people by me helping them. Like that's one way of my public image being controlled by being that one. And I went, oh Jesus, I do that. Oh no.
Yep. What's the name of that book?
Dating, Loving, and Leaving a Narcissist.
Okay, we're going to put that in the show notes.
Very helpful. Very helpful. It compares, it's the codependent. She's written the codependence or dummy book, right? So it's sort of taking it into the narcissist spectrum.
Beautiful. Okay, so that's in the show notes. You can go and click and order it on Amazon. So the other thing under codependent, you talked about the control, the fix it, and then the boundaries, right? Which I think all of us in this space will agree that boundaries, if it's not the number one skill, it's certainly in the top two or three. That's absolutely necessary. And most people who've gotten into these high conflict relationships with narcissists or other neurodiverse people usually were raised without boundaries. They can't articulate what they are, why they're important. They feel bad or guilty for setting them, and they have no bloody idea how to uphold them. And so that's kind of a red flag right there, isn't it?
Oh, huge. I actually taught a boundary class on Monday night, and every single one of the people in there was just like, I didn't know what it was. And when I tried to just make a request, and I think that's what people don't realize the difference between setting a boundary and a wish list. I wish you wouldn't leave the seat up. I wish you'd put the milk cap away, whatever, right? Those are things, but it's the actual conversation of, this is bothering me, and I would like you to do it this way. And a lot of people are like, I said it was a boundary. Well, again, that doesn't necessarily, it's learning to set them and then seeing if the person responds and honors them, right? If we had done this in the beginning, none of us would be in a relationship with a narcissist. We would have tested them out on date two, and poof, we would have known they're not boundary obliging people, but we didn't have the skills to even think we had the right to ask. I didn't, right? And so I just gave and gave and gave and gave, and there was nothing left of Tracy. I didn't know who I was in the end.
So much good stuff here. Anything else on that kind of top challenges before we talk about some strategies that you would suggest?
I think the rewriting of your life together and feeling like you've been erased, and that's a huge challenge to see that we were together for 20 years and they're out there telling the world all these horrible lies, and it really feels like your life was a lie. And that's what happens to survivors, is they hold on to, oh my gosh, my life was a lie, and they discredit the 20-year marriage, even though it wasn't that bad all the time, or whatever the parts are, right? This whole I lived a life of a lie because they've erased you. My ex actually took 10 years of photos on a redundant five-time drive, stuck a nail through it. So every family photo was erased. Every memory we had for my child's growing up for 10 years was completely erased. And that hurt, right? But it's more than that physical stuff. It's the emotional part of, how could you be so cruel to our children during this divorce? That, like, how could you do that? Like, we're a happy family. Why are you telling the children these lies? Why are you turning them against their mother, their father? You know, all of these hurtful tricks. I think that all ties into the being erased part.
And what's the strategy that you recommend for people who are dealing that with that revisionist history or erasing of somebody? What do you advise them to do?
It's a spectrum. It depends on where they come in and how healthy they are to be able to process that and come to truth, to terms with the truth, and not take their gaslighting that this was all a lie, right? I'm not saying that their relationship wasn't based on a lie, but for 20 years, your marriage was what it was, and your family and your children were raised, and all of these things happened. And if we just poof and erase all of that 20 years, we go into trauma. We are in total, like, my life means nothing. What am I going to do? Oh no, right? So it's depending on where they are and how they can receptively receive this. And at the beginning, they're deer in the headlights. It's really hard to go, oh, let's just not believe that that's lie, right? It's learning the skills to unravel the truth. And yes, often we find the abuse has been there all along, but was so stealth in many cases that you didn't see it until you did. And so it depends on where they are. How would you have handled that?
It's interesting because sometimes I feel like clients interpret their narcissist as he or she never loved me, and the whole thing was a facade. And to me, that's a perspective. That's not a fact. That's a perspective, and one that causes severe pain to the person thinking it. And certainly, if you were to communicate that with your children, And so I think that narcissists are mentally unwell. And for me, I guess I ask the question, can somebody be a narcissist and love their spouse, love their children, and still have all of these behaviors? And so I kind of take people down that path. Is it possible for this duality to be true? So I will say of my ex-husband, there's a beautiful part of him, the part I fell in love with. And yet, because of his behaviors, he's an incredibly displeasing, difficult person to be in relationship with. But I would always tell my children, and he was pretty displeasing to them, your dad loves you with every ounce of his being. And actually, I know that he would jump in front of a moving vehicle to save you. And it doesn't feel very much like love because he has a really hard time. This is not a skill that he's good at. And so I've had clients who push back and go, bullshit, doesn't love me at all. And I can't argue that. I haven't been there with you. But I think that for most of us, there is an ability to say, I married you. We brought children into the world together. There were memories and times. And if nothing else, there are these amazing human beings that we created together. And so I can accept that you're this way and you're displeasing, and I can set my boundaries and do everything without whitewashing away our entire history. And I say all of that because at the end of the day, Tracy, my feeling is, if you're believing something that makes you feel horrible, that's just an opinion, not a fact, come up with a new story, one that more aligns with you.
I have a sign. I don't know if you can see it. Can you see it back there? What am I making this mean? I just got it delivered and put it up last week.
Oh, wow. And it's perfect. What am I making this mean?
It's that story. What story am I putting behind it that he didn't love us, that we were nothing? And like, yeah, but again,
Does that serve you?
the part that you just described is just the sort of the radical acceptance that comes later in the funnel. New in the funnel, you're in trauma. There's no way you could possibly, but as I take my women through my groups and stuff, like all of a sudden, like a light bulb goes off and they're like, I get it. And they let go of the story. They let go of what they're holding on to, which is keeping them attached to the trauma, right? It comes down to realizing, what am I making this mean? It means I'm not lovable. It means I don't know how to love. It means I made a mistake. It means
It
I'm.
means me, right? So you're talking about and I think that's such an important point. So wherever you are, if your thought is all of this means something bad about me, then what I raised my kids on is how somebody else behaves is their responsibility and their problem. How you behave is your responsibility and your problem. And that can bring us back to you may not have known that you were a codependent, but you are. That's your part. Don't beat yourself up with a bat. But you know what? Girlfriend, guy friend, look in the mirror and start working on it. Start working on your self-esteem, start learning about boundaries. Don't interpret their bad behavior as meaning something about you. Their bad behavior means something about them.
And when we can
Beautiful.
take the load off exactly what you just said, off of us self-blaming. And when you say my life is a lie and everything like that, you are discrediting all of those good times, which
It's almost like you're drinking the Kool-Aid still. You're kind of like now you're telling his story or her story when in fact, no, my life wasn't a lie. I may have married someone who lied, but my life was my life, my children and my children. Love that. Love that. Love that. Okay, we could just go on and on, but I want to move on to tactics. What tactics people can expect. Now, I want to talk about in the thick of the divorce right now. Let's just come up with a few things that are likely to happen. And you have experience with a pretty severe high level, plus, of course, whomever you're coaching. So I would love to try and do the whole spectrum on this. So, and
absolutely.
I'm even going to start like when I got divorced, New York wasn't a no-fault state. It was a fault state. And my ex was so determined to not let me divorce him that he stood before the judge and said, her grounds for divorcing me aren't true. That I think I said he didn't have sex with me because I didn't want to say he was abusive. on public record. And so he said, that's not true. The only reason we haven't had sex is because she doesn't want to. You have to tell her that she has to come home and stay married to me.
Wow.
And I was just sitting there like, yep. That did just come out of his mouth. So that was a tactic that I was dealing with, where he truly thought that he could go to court and talk the judge into making me go home and be married.
Wow, you can't make that up. Well, that's classic. I love that story. All right. So if we think about the financial things, and because there's always financial games, and they're on the spectrum, right? Most times we see them cutting off the money. All of a sudden, no, you don't have any money. I'll have someone coming in this afternoon. I've never met her, but first thing she said is, he's cut off the money and I don't have any money. Hiding assets. And it's not just like, okay, we're getting a divorce, let me go hide something. The hiding has been going on for all many years, right? So it's like, oh my goodness, they've got the secret account, and Maya had a secret account in Switzerland. And it was crazy, right? Running up the legal bill to ruin you. Like, that's a financial thing that they all do. I had 7 trials and we were fighting over $50,000, which meant I was going to get 25. Thank you. My divorce bill was $100,000. It was legal challenge, lies, legal challenge. I was like, what are we doing here? Just give me my 25,000 and go home.
So I don't know if you know Lisa Johnson. I'm forgetting her partner. His first name's Chris, but they've been there, got out. So you're actually referencing legal abuse. So we've got financial abuse, right? Which is shutting down the money, hiding assets, mm-hmm. you know, doing all that. Then we've got the legal abuse, which is like court order after court order and appeal after appeal until you're running out of money. So those are two things. What's something around the children?
All right. With the children, turning them against you, lying to them, treating them terribly if they side with you. Like, all of a sudden there's 3 kids and they go off to the narcissist's house, and one is more of a, say, mommy person, and that kid is going to get abused.
That's the black sheep.
Loyalty test, right? And so you'll just sit there and like, why are you beating up the one sensitive child in the family? Right, you know, it's crazy. And also not listening to what their needs are. A narcissistic parent, I don't care if it's a male or a female, will not honor the things that the children need because they think the time is theirs, which means you're not going to soccer. It's my time. You're not going to go see your friend's birthday party because it's my weekend. I don't have to do normal things like go to the doctor or the dentist or go to your parent-teacher conference because I'm the Disneyland parent, male or female. My time is my time. You can't take it. And therefore, they're not listening that the kid really wants to see their best friend on their birthday party or take advantage of the kid things that they want to do because it's their time. And that is not in the best interest of the children. And narcissists play that game all the time.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. There's so much around the children. And of course, with the narcissist in my household, the trophy child changed from one to the other as they got older. The black sheep changed. The black sheep was always really severely emotionally abused and harmed. And so that's a whole nother topic, because we have to spend the rest of our lives getting healthy ourselves so that we can support our children to not take their other parent personally. And then I think the other thing I would just add to that, lower on the spectrum, is just growing up with emotional unavailability. And of course, if you grow up with someone who's emotionally unavailable, you very well may go and fall in love with someone who's emotionally unavailable. And so teaching our children what that is and balancing it out with our availability, I think, is a key piece there.
Well, and do you find that the clients that kids go off to the narcissist's house, there's almost like when they come back, there's like a deprogramming. I have one client whose narcissist tells the children that mommy should be dead. And the kids come home and say, why don't you just kill yourself? And then 3 days later, they're back to being normal children. They go back and they come back and you're the devil spawn. We hate your guts. Why don't you just jump in front of a bus? And then 4 days later, they're curled up in bed reading a book with you. So it's like this deprogramming portion that Again, if they're being fed a diet of lies and things that are abusive, it's really hard for them to right their ship. They don't know what's right, what's wrong.
And if you're a parent who then takes that bait, you're not going to be curling up in bed with them a day or two later because you're going to be putting fuel on a fire that you actually want to go out. So I had that. My children were very young. They were barely in grade school when I finally got divorced and moved out. And in the beginning, I remember like giving them consequences, but I pretty quickly was like, this is really interesting. They leave my peaceful little people and they come back these like nasty, chaotic, more for my kids, they were more like fighting with each other and like all of the rules of the house went out the window. And I think with the help of my therapist or the kids' therapist, we created this bridge. So it's like when they come home, they're going to be aliens, chaotic aliens. And I need to give them a container and just allow them to dial down and abide by the rules of my house and not give them consequences because they just came from this hostile, chaotic, do whatever you want and stay up until 4 in the morning and play your video games. So, whatever they came from, parents listening, like if your kids are coming home different than they leave, don't blame them. Figure out what that bridge is, what that safe container is to allow them to dial back down to normal. And the other thing, Brooke Olson, who does high conflict co-parenting, he has a podcast. He talks about how if that parent is really bashing, let's say mom, for instance, dad is bashing mom. Even creating a bridge for when they leave you, it's almost like they have to detach their loyalty so that they're safe going into the other household. And so I thought that was a brilliant piece of advice for parents.
Yeah, it is brilliant because it's exactly what has to happen, right?
And the
And
kids just, they don't know how to navigate it. And the whole thing is, it's all they know. So it's normal to them. So they're not like, what's going on here? And they're just like, okay, this is my crazy life, right? Okay, this is great. Let's begin to wrap up here. What would be the three for you, the three top strategies, approaches, tips that you would give our listeners who are entering high conflict divorce, like for them to do? What are the three things our listeners should do if this is their situation?
build a team, get some help on board. And so many people are reluctant. I don't need a divorce coach, but they'll pay $500 an hour for a lawyer to say, "Oh my God, they just did this. Oh no." And then it's $500 later. They don't understand the importance of having that sounding board to actually say, "You know what? I hear what just happened. And this is good because it gives us some evidence. Here's how you tell your lawyer to use this piece of evidence. Or here we're building a case about bad parenting. Again, we're not happy they did it, but here's how that is not such a bad thing." Like reframing it, changing the story about whatever it is, giving them the tools to not let these things trigger them. I think that's one of the kicker things that I love to teach people, because the narcissist is going to continue to trigger you and trigger you and trigger you until you learn the game and learn not to allow their triggering attempts to affect you. You will be controlled and you will get knocked off kilter. You'll just get better and then they'll do something, you're triggered and you go right back down.
I refer to that as desensitizing your buttons. So they're pushing your buttons. They'll continue to push your buttons from now until forever. So the question is, how do you unplug your button? And that's all about you, not them. And then they can push away until the cows come home and you'll be like, yeah, whatever. That's what I did. By the end of my co-parenting days with my ex-husband, he'd be like, you are such a nasty blah, blah, blah. And I'd be like, okay, let's go with that. Just like because there were no buttons left. So get some support, figure out what your triggers are, and begin to work with your therapist, your coach, your support team to unplug those triggers.
Absolutely. And I think the truth sets you free, right? If you are one that is just enveloped in fear over what will happen and what will my life look like and how will I afford to live and blah, 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 and you've got this whole laundry list of fears, they can control you with them, right? So to understand the truth that, again, gaslighting, common narcissist thing is, you'll never see the children. I'll tell everyone what a terrible parent you are, right? And to know your truth is to go, that's not the way the law works, right? And you have got nothing against you that shows, like, I've
right,
had people
right.
have been so, arrested 10 times for DV and they still get their kids. You didn't do anything, but the, right. they're putting this fear in you, which freezes you, which means you don't fight. So
yep.
learning to control that allows you
love that. To
attitude you just had a few minutes ago, like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. And then you just move on. If you don't have the fears of I could lose my children, then you are freer to not hold that stuff.
And I think what's beneath that is if you don't get yourself educated on how this process works and what the law is and what your rights are, then you're going to be listening to this individual who is not a matrimonial attorney, and you're going to get scared and you're going to believe them. And so my favorite saying to clients who are in that position is, just because they say it doesn't make it so. It's that simple. And if you have to listen to the 9 to 5, Monday through Friday matrimonial attorney, not that they work 9 to 5, or your soon to be ex who has no law degree, it's a no-brainer. Make sure you're listening to the right expert. So I love that. So in terms, folks, as we begin to wrap up, get a support team that's healthy individuals, that's a divorce coach, a therapist, that's an attorney who actually understands high conflict personalities and narcissism. Work on your triggers. Write a list. What pisses you off? What scares you? And write what your trigger is. It may be an unworthiness trigger. It may be a control trigger. It may be a, figure out what your triggers are, a disrespect trigger. And then third, get the facts. Get the facts about your rights and the legal process and stop drinking their Kool-Aid. Stop believing them just because they open their mouth and say something.
Right. Beautiful. And again, all of that is going to control you until you control it. Right.
Yep.
When learn, hey, that's not the way the law works. Okay, well, you can keep on saying that lie, but let's see what happens in court. It gets to a point where you are empowered by the radical acceptance of the fact that that's not true. Hey,
yeah.
Instead, we're holding on to the story like we talked about in the beginning. We're holding on to the fear story
yep.
instead of looking at the reality is, you've done nothing. There's not one red flag on your checklist that says you're going to lose your children.
Right.
So let's not sit all of that energy and keep you up at night
yep.
With that lie, because that's from the narcissist. They're liars. We're listening to a liar. Why? We have to change that in our head and not let them get to us.
Liar, liar, pants on fire. You have a free gift for our listeners. So in the show notes is a link to an ebook that goes over what the 15 worst mistakes you can make divorcing a narcissist, and I'm assuming how to not make them. Excellent.
Yeah.
And how can our listeners reach you if they're interested in learning more about your service?
Well, they can go to my website, narcissistabusesupport.com, where you will find links to my YouTube channel and my podcasts and my book and all of the other things, my social media and all of the work that I do is right there. And yeah, you can get a lot of help. We have about 700 pages on our website of resources.
Wow.
So if you're looking for a support group in Indiana, we've got a list and we probably have one that we found. We're not vouching for them. We just gathered them up and put them in there. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for support, there's a lot of help there.
Beautiful. Tracy, thank you so much for coming and sharing your experience, your wisdom, your story with us. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And we'll be back again real soon with another episode of High Conflict Divorce Demystified. Until then, you take care. Embarking on a high conflict divorce can be overwhelming, leaving you feeling uncertain and powerless. That's precisely why the Divorce Readiness Masterclass was created, a free 1-hour live session to empower you through the toughest divorces. Uncover the entire scope of the divorce process and learn our secret strategies to reclaim your power. Visit jbddivorcesupport.com/masterclass and begin to confidently handle your divorce today.
Thanks for joining us on the Journey Beyond Divorce podcast. I hope you found guidance and encouragement to help you along your journey. If you like my podcast, please take a minute to subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. You can also visit us at jbddivorcesupport.com, where our team of coaches support both men and women throughout one-on-one coaching, group programs, online courses, and free resources. Stay tuned for our next episode, and I'll talk to you soon.